Hi, I'm Notre Dame safety Kyle Hamilton, and you're listening to Single High, a Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com, the official home of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club. Here are your hosts, Frank Vitovich and Greg Flamont.
Welcome, everybody, to yet another edition of Single High, the Notre Dame football podcast from UHND. I am your host, or one of your hosts today, Frank Vitovich, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Greg Flamong. Greg, how's it going today, buddy?
I'm feeling good, man. We finally got some intel. We got people going to practice. We've got good information. So it was really exciting to actually get like some practice reports, from the beat who attended the practice, and looking forward to what we're going to talk about today.
I know, man. This season is—it's almost crept up on me. It's been life has been a little crazy. Life outside of day job and podcasting. I kind of have one of those, but it's been a little wild on in that regard. And yeah, it was weird. Like even last night, it was so funny, man. I am like, I got a lot going on right now. So yesterday, I'm looking at Twitter, and I see my Eagle writers that I follow, like tweeting pictures from the stadium. I'm like, why the hell are they at the stadium today? And I was like, oh, it's the first preseason game. I was like, oh man, all right, I gotta get caught back up. But I know, like the Notre Dame practices opening up. The 40-second video clips coming out. It's getting the juices flowing. It's getting everything. It's getting the excitement building for this season. Yeah, we've talked a lot about how weird and wild and unpredictable of a season it's going to be. We're super excited because we have a very special guest who's going to join us in a little bit. We got Matt Freeman from Irish Sports Daily. Joining us, we pre-recorded an interview with him that is, it's a lot of fun. You guys are gonna love it. We touched on a lot of predictable topics, but we talked receivers, the safeties, the D-backs, a lot on the defensive line, the offensive line, a lot that has come out, from the first few days of camp. Speaking of things that have come out, when we recorded last week, Brian Kelly said, "Hey, I'm going to tell you the captains on Monday," and it was Friday. It was Friday that we learned. He, he also said we would know the starting quarterback after that first open practice, which it seems like that announcement is going to come on Monday now. But we all assume that's a foregone conclusion. But note the captains announced today. I don't think there was any surprises in the group. It was a big number, 7. Another year of 7 captains, for Notre Dame. Greg, any initial takes on on that? Because we did talk about it a little bit last week.
Right. So the captains are Kyren Williams, Jarrett Patterson, Avery Davis, Kurt Heinisch, Myron Tagovailoa-Mosa, and Drew White, and of course the beloved Kyle Hamilton. No surprises. I mean, sure. It makes sense, and you can see it from all of them. 7 is a lot, but then again, it kind of doesn't matter. It's every kind of level of the team. You've got a running back, you've got linemen, you've got a receiver, you've got 2 D linemen, a linebacker, and then a safety. So there's kind of a captain at every kind of in every spot. So, and obviously the quarterback, like we talked about last week, like the quarterback is always kind of a captain anyway, so it doesn't matter. So, it makes sense. I don't have any kind of qualms with it. And it looks like a good group.
I would say my key takeaways, and I'll probably, we'll see if I have time to write an article about this later today, but my 2 takeaways, or well, first takeaway, 1, I like that there's 2 juniors in the captains, because Kyren Williams and Kyle Hamilton are clearly 2 of the best players on this football team.
Yeah.
They are
yeah.
the players you're going to be looking at. If it's a big third down, you're going to be looking at you know, Kyle Hamilton to make a play in the secondary. If it's a big third down on offense and it's third and one, third and two, third and three, you're looking at Kyren Williams. So I like that. I feel like in the past, sometimes Notre Dame has shied away from naming juniors captains because it's like, no, you got to earn it. You got to be a senior. And, you know, that's just not, you know, not the case. As you know, Jalen Smith would probably you know, attest to. He was clearly, he should have been a captain his junior year because everybody knew he was going to leave if he had the year that he was capable of. So I like to see the juniors. You know, we talked about it last week. It's interesting, Jack Cohn not a captain, and I think that was the only intrigue we had coming into the captains was Cohn going to be a captain? Because we said, well, if you name Cohn a captain before you name a quarterback, did you, you know, do you need to name your quarterback? you already did. So he's not, I don't think it's a big deal to your point. He's a, you know, he's a transfer in. He's going to start. Like, I think, again, if Brian Kelly comes out on Monday, I think he said he's going to announce the starting quarterback and says it's Drew Pine, it's going to be one of the biggest, like, shocking news announcements that I can recall. Of you know, since running this website, which is going on over 20 years, and so I think we're all safely assuming it's Jack Cohn, and you know, those were the only two takeaways I really had from you know, from the captains being being announced today. To your point, you know, you look at each one of them and you're like, yeah, those are all players that you look at and you say, yes, these are leaders. You know, leaders of this team. And if anything, the only other takeaway I have is, as I'm looking at the picture of this again on my other screen as we're talking here, and the only thing that just stands out is just the slender Lord Myron. he looks different, which also, I mean, very, very bittersweet, you know, week for you know, for Myron. Yeah, with the news that came out that he wasn't at practice because his you know, his father had unexpectedly you know, had passed away this week, which is just, that's you know, obviously condolences out to you know, out to the family, because that is that's not something, you know, anybody in college wants to, you know, wants to be going through. But tough week for you know, for him.
And it's, yeah, awful, because it sounded like it was sudden. You know, exactly. It's one thing, yeah, if these things are, you know, there's an illness or something, you know, it's coming. If it suddenly, yeah, happens, it's just like, there's no time to process. There's no time to, yeah, kind of come to grips with anything. It's just kind of happened. So, you know, like you said, condolences to him and his family and the team and just whoever is impacted by this. Yeah. It's really bad.
Yeah, it is. It was not, yeah, not new. And when they had said he wasn't at practice yesterday, and then that was the reason, you're like, oh man, that is, that's brutal. Just, yeah, absolutely, absolutely brutal for anybody, let alone so he's got to be, without looking up his bio, he's probably got to be 21, 22 years old,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just absolutely, absolutely brutal. But, I mean, congrats, yeah, to him and to the other captains, you know, for the well-earned C's that they're going to have, you know, on their jerseys this year. You look at the group, it's a bunch of, you know, it's seven kids that, you know, that represent the university, you know, really, really, really well. And without diving too deep into it too, if you don't follow Pete Sampson and you're listening to this podcast, I have no idea why you would listen to us and not Pete Sampson. So, cause, you know, Pete's one of the best in the biz. He had a really great, like, Twitter thread today, just on like the backstories and some of the adversity that that group of captains has gone through, you know, and why they why they represent Notre Dame as you know, as well as they do. So check that out, you know, if you have not. But you know, without further ado, Greg, unless you have anything else to add before we cut here to our interview with Matt, I think we just we roll that.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, here we go. Well, and welcome to the pod, Matt Freeman from Irish Sports Daily. Matt, thanks for joining us today.
No problem. I hope that I can live up to the standard that Greg has set for a fellow Korean and Kyle Hamilton. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah. By the way, Greg, you're limited to two Kyle Hamilton questions, I think, today.
Okay. All right. Fine. They're going to be long, though. They're going to be very long-winded questions.
They can't be six parts each.
I'm gonna ask the first question is going to have six follow-ups embedded. So hopefully you're ready.
All right. Well, I mean, hey, we're excited. We got fall camp going. I know Greg has got a lot of questions. He's got a lot of questions lined up. Greg, I'm gonna let you get started because I know you got a long list of things you want to talk about. We'll take it from there.
Well, why don't we ask Matt, what are your just general kind of takeaways? You know, you got to see practice for the first time in like over a year. So just what kind of stood out to you? What were you looking for? What kind of popped?
I mean, the first thing that stood out was just the physique of the team. I mean, they look like, for better words, an SEC program. I mean, there's just big bodies everywhere. I mean, I'm sure you guys saw the pictures of Audric Estime floating around, the freshman running back. I mean, that's just a different type of athlete that Notre Dame's recruiting right now. But all of them look in shape. I mean, there's been past years where you've kind of seen them walk into practice and you're just like, that guy's got a couple years left, you know? So I think that's probably the biggest takeaway or one of the biggest takeaways. And then the second takeaway is I just think that everything's really sharp just in terms of how they practice. There's not a lot of wasted time, so to speak. You can tell it's a veteran team. There's just not very much coaching up that the coaches have to do. So, but then just in terms of the players themselves, I mean, the veterans, the guys that you would hope stick out, they stood out. I think quarterback right now is trying to find their way, so to speak. I think Drew Pine, he's done some good stuff, but he's just kind of in that little, trying to find that consistency, so to speak. So, and then obviously Cone is trying to just build a rapport with all the guys. So I guess those are a couple of the bigger takeaways that I noticed through 1.5 practices.
Was there anything that you specifically were looking out for? Right. So just like, you know, oh, I wanted to watch the linemen or I wanted to watch the D line or something like that.
The way we break it up is we have three people from our sports daily there or most of the time. So we break it up into offense, defense, and I just kind of let my eyes wander as the third guy. Mm-hmm. So going in, I didn't really have anything that I was specifically watching out for. I did spend quite a bit of time just watching the D-line just because I wanted to see just what some of the younger guys like Jordan Botello, Myron wasn't there, obviously, but just like Jacob Lacey and Riley Mills, just to see what they were kind of where they were at. And it was kind of telling that Mike Elston wasn't really working with them. He spent the majority of his time working with freshman Kahanu Kia, who's moved into that Viper role, and he was coaching him up quite a bit. So I think that's probably pretty telling. Also, Justin Edimola was not there or not practicing. So, but I was just kind of watching those young guys just because we hadn't seen a lot of them, obviously, with COVID. So we really hadn't seen their development. And I was kind of just wanted to kind of get eyes on them.
I want to stick to the D-line for a quick second. What is your, I guess, impression of Isaiah Foskey? Because there's been, I think, a lot of, I guess, I would say assumptions on what he's going to turn into. And I think everyone kind of saw his freshman year, you know, he got the block punt. And last year he made a couple flashy plays, you know, against Duke when he's unblocked. And then he made the great play against, I guess it was USF on the fake punt. And then, you know, he had another block punt against Pitt. And then he was in coverage against ETN on a, you know, they completed the pass, but it was a great play and he was right there. But these are kind of, you know, a couple special teams plays and then he's unblocked and then he's just kind of athletic in one. And I think people see his athletic ability and just kind of make the assumption like, okay, he has a clear path to the lineup and now he's going to just kind of take the next step. But, you know, Blake Fisher kind of I guess, made his name for a better, for lack of a better way to put it, just kind of shutting down Foskey. And then, you know, I read a few practice reports from you, and then from Pete Sampson, and then on 247 as well, just our IOS Illustrated, I should say, just how Lug did such a good job against Foskey. So I just kind of like, what did you see yesterday? Do you have kind of, I guess, concern? Do you feel like, you know, he's coming along? Like, what is your take on that situation?
I think it's a big year for him. Obviously, under Mike Elston, guys typically make a big jump in this year, year three. And I think he's kind of on that pace. I agree with you. Last year, I think there's maybe a little too much hype going into this year, just because, like you mentioned, he was unblocked on those sacks. So you'd like to kind of see him get off a block, go make a play. But, I mean, the athletic potential is there. Obviously, he looks like $1 million. From what I saw yesterday, he still has a little ways to go, because I think you would like to see him at least go 50-50 with Josh Lug. Because, I mean, I think Lug is a quality Power 5 lineman, but I don't think he's like a lock to be an NFL draft pick or anything as it stands right now. So right. I think you'd like to see Foskey win a little bit more. I did not watch one-on-ones yesterday because the receivers and DBs were doing one-on-ones at the same time. So I didn't get to catch that, and I wish I kind of did. But I do think that he has the potential to have a breakout year, but I think he's got to do it. And I think those around Notre Dame, they would love to see Jordan Botello push him and keep pushing him, just to serve as an extra motivation to kind of get to that next level, because I don't think that he's quite got there yet.
You know, yeah, one name you mentioned, I think in your first answer, which also I love how you came in hot right out of the gates. Answer one, Notre Dame looks like an SEC program. Send tweet. now you mentioned Jacob Lacy, and he's a guy that, like, even going through like all the offseason, I feel almost like he's one Notre Dame fans are not talking about enough, or just like at all, really. So I guess what'd you see out of him specifically that made you, you know, mention him? And then two, you know, what do you think we're going to see from him this year?
I think he's in an interesting spot in his career because he dropped 25 pounds this offseason. So he had played one tech before. So dropping 25 pounds kind of makes you think he may be leaning towards moving over to three tech, or at least taking some snaps there. He is an explosive kid. If you go back and watch his high school film, he just moves differently for a guy his size. I kind of compared him to Christian Wilkins when he was coming out. Obviously, he hasn't reached that quote-unquote potential yet, but I think it's there. Yesterday, he didn't get a ton of work, but I think they were just – it's just a weird situation when you have Justin Amiola and Myron out, and you have guys just kind of playing out of position to kind of give the offense a good look in the scrimmage portion. Because I think they even had Gabriel Rubio playing big end. And, I mean, I don't think that's going to happen during his career. But from what I saw, Lacy, same player efforts there. You'd like to see him make a couple more plays. But Jason Adeola was the one that really stood out on the interior. The first play of the scrimmage, he had a nice tackle for loss on Kyren, where he just kind of exploded through the line and made the play. So I think Jason is the one that kind of keep you on that out for. But it'll be interesting to see where Lacy ends up, just because there is so much depth on the interior, the one and three tech spots.
And, you know, while we're on D line, I know Greg's probably got like seven more position groups he wants to cover, but one guy whose name Kelly said yesterday, and who seems to be picking up some hype, maybe some steam, is Riley Mills. What you notice anything from him yesterday, other than I think he's one of those guys that you see the pictures of him now and you're like, damn, this kid got big, like, real fast.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually talking to a player from another school that had played Notre Dame last year, and he said that, like, I tweeted that picture of Riley out, and he actually texted me about it. He's like, yeah, he looks like J.J. Watt on the field, but if he can learn to use his hands, he'll be an elite player. So Riley did some good stuff yesterday. I think he's playing a little bit lower than he did last year, where – I think he was still in that transition phase of learning that he can't just toss kids around and stuff like that as a freshman. So I noticed he was playing a little bit lower, and obviously the power is there. He was playing inside at three tech and outside on the at the big end position. So he's got that flexibility to give Notre Dame quite a some options there, pending the situation. But I expect him to kind of really take the next step forward this year. And I'm kind of interested to see what he does next Thursday when we get the full practice, just to kind of see if he can put back-to-back days together when we're there.
So let's get back to real quick the estimate thing. He is like, what is going on? Like, that guy is so big. I mean, it's like, and it's funny because I was listening to the Inside the Garage pod, and those guys were even like, man, that kid, he's big. And it's not like they've never seen a, you know, built at football player, right? Like, they're juniors in college. Like, this is Notre Dame. And even they are like, man, that guy is jacked. So I'll get back to the running backs in a little bit. But so you mentioned you missed the one-on-ones for the D-line and the offensive line because you were with the real athletes, which is the receivers and DBs. So, I mean, look, let's talk about the Kevin Austin situation, because it's been hovering over, like, the whole off season. As soon as the season ended, it's like, okay, the Kevin Austin situation is there. It's budding. And, you know, the reports came out and people are talking about just like they're almost speechless. Like, oh, Kevin Austin. All right. So let's hear it. Is it? Okay. On a scale of 1 to Kyle Hamilton, how much should I overreact?
Kyle Hamilton, that's a high bar. we'll go with 7.5.
Okay.
I think that the last full practice that we saw was on March 5th of 2020. Mm. They weren't in pads. They were in just shorts and a helmet. First day of spring ball before COVID. Kevin Austin probably had the most dominant performance I've seen at a practice of a Notre Dame receiver in the last couple years. And that's better than Chase Claypool, better than Miles Boykin. I mean, he was just torching guys. So it was a little disappointing when he didn't get on the field last year.
A little bit disappointing.
Sure. Tommy Rees was probably crying himself to sleep.
I'm sure, but Ian Book was crying himself to sleep.
But yesterday, I mean, he did kind of what we all expected. He did start off a little slow. He had a couple drops early, I believe, in the one-on-ones, and he might have had one in 7-on-7. But when they started scrimmaging, the second drive, Drew Pine found them for like a 30, 35-yard bomb. And that was encouraging. And then on a 4th-and-5, they just completed like a quick 10-yard out, and then Austin took it another 15 yards down the field where he made a couple guys miss. That's what Notre Dame was missing last year, because I think you saw Javon McKinley and Ben Skoranek probably overachieve to a point. And they're more jump ball guys, but Kevin Austin's a jump ball guy, but then he can also go make a play happen. So I think he flashed that. And then he had a couple nice just throw it up, fade 50-50 balls in the one-on-one session where he just – I think it was Cam Hart or Emost. I mean, it was just one of those catches where you're like, okay, he's back. So I think the whole media gathering was just kind of looking at each other like, okay, that's confirmed. But, yeah, I think if he can stay on the field, stay healthy, Notre Dame has a dynamic playmaker there. He may start off slow just because I'm guessing there is an adjustment, because, I mean, he hasn't essentially played football in a live game since 2018, because I don't really count last year because he was still hurt. So right. I think there may be a slight adjustment to the game speed for him, but, I mean, the talent is truly there, and I know that we've been saying that for 3 years, but, I mean, if he can get on the field, I think Notre Dame fans will finally be able to see it.
Greg, can you remind me who predicted or who picked Austin to lead the team in receptions and receiving yards this year on our earlier pod after you lost faith?
You know what? I don't know who it was. I encourage everyone to go back and listen to the predictions pod And well, let's find out. I don't remember. Listen, I don't think anyone has lost faith. And I reject that assertion. You know, that is a rejection on my part. I did not lose faith. I'm just and by the way, I was the one who said he was going to play in all the games. So just keep that in mind as well. No, man. Look, Kevin Austin is the guy who can win on any route. That's the type of talent that he has. You know, Lindsey is all the rest of them are just kind of niche guys, niche roles. Whereas Kevin, it doesn't matter. And that's what, you know, makes the offense go from, you know, an offense that can be really good and really effective to very dangerous all the time. So it's obviously very important. I think you saw that with
Chase Claypool a couple years ago, where if you have a true number one, it just opens up the entire offense. And especially when you have a guy like Michael Mayer, I mean, the pass game can really take off.
Yeah. And when you have our run game, the Notre Dame run game, they were good last year and nobody had to respect the deep ball last year. Like if they do this year, which actually, I don't know, Greg, if you had anything lined up for Agent Zero at wide receiver either, but the pick or the clips coming out of Lindsey are also encouraging, but also he's another one where the last couple of years we've been like, okay, this is it, he's gonna break out, and then injuries kind of derailed him last year too. But anything from Lindsey that stood out yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, he made I believe three, maybe four just spectacular plays. I mean, one of them was a deep ball and one-on-ones where I forget the DB, I think it might have been Clarence Lewis, where it kind of bounced off both of them and it popped in the air. Lindsey caught it, scored. But there's a real confidence about Lindsey. I wrote about that yesterday where, I mean, he's talking a ton of trash to anyone and everyone, even if they're not listening, he's still talking. but the thing that stood out to me the most with him yesterday was that he was just turning it loose. I think he's finally fully healthy from that hamstring, and it's to the point where he trusts his body, and you can tell just because there's no hesitation and he just going and playing ball. And I think that's probably the biggest hurdle that he's had over the last year, just in terms of just being healthy, trusting his body to not fail him. And right now you're seeing a confident player, so hopefully he can stay on that path for Notre Dame's sake.
Yeah, that's been my big thing with Lindsey is he switching gears? And that was what I wanted to hear from you, because he's a gear switcher. You know, some guys, they can kind of accelerate and they can hold that kind of speed. Lindsey is a gear switcher guy. He goes and then he hits a gear and then he just kind of accelerates from there. And if he loses that, then you're kind of losing the type of player that he is. So my whole thing was, you know, does he still have that? And just seeing his body, you know, he's I feel like he's stronger, but he's also leaner too. It seems like he's leaned out, but he's also kind of just like very muscular, like kind of sinewy in a way. And that's I think that's what he needs. He doesn't need the bulk. He needs just that kind of slender kind of strength that I just feel like wasn't there the previous years. And obviously Kelly talked about how he was transformational. So just like, I'm super heartened by, you know, hearing what Matt just said about how he's turning it loose and just letting it go. Because I mean, look, and Frank knows this, I wrote an article about how I thought they should cater the offense around what Lindsey can do. Now, obviously you don't need to, because you have Kyren now and you have Tyree and what they can do, but he can hurt defenses in so many different ways. He doesn't need to catch 40 passes to do that. So, that's super encouraging.
I think last year, I mean, he was effective at the early part of the year when he was playing, but it was just all 10-yard hitches or outs, and that's not his game.
No.
And, I mean, I think it was encouraging that he put that on film to show that he can do it, but, I mean, you need him to be running a double move on that, and that never happened last year just because he couldn't get healthy.
You need him running down the sidelines with an opposing coach's hand on his knees and head down after he runs right by him on one of those jet sweeps. That's the Braden Lindsey I'm hoping we see this year. And like I said, optimism is building. We're early into this pod. I'm only halfway through my beer, but we're almost at 11-1, 12-0 status at this point, Greg.
No. So the way this works, Matt, is Frank starts the pod at like a 6. And he finishes at 95 Nebraska, like every time. That's where we're going to be. Not even we want Bama. It's like we want Tommy Frazier and and Grant Wistrom. That's what we want. So
bring it.
Can only imagine if this was a wine podcast.
Oh, man. Okay. So we've touched on the Austin. We've touched on Lindsey. I guess were there any other receivers that kind of popped to you? I don't care who it is, but you know, I've seen some things about Deon Colsey, about Lorenzo Styles. Like, who for you kind of just caught your eye, like raise your eyebrow a little bit?
I'll start with Lawrence Keys III. I think he kind of did what he's always done in fall camp, where you just see a receiver that no one can guard. So, I mean, he's kind of in the same mold as Lindsey. He's a smaller kid with a lot of speed, and he knows how to use it. He can cut and get in and out of his breaks a little bit smoother than Lindsey. I think he's just a better athlete there. I don't think he has, obviously, the top-end speed. But, I mean, he torched your boy Kyle for about a 40-yard touchdown in one-on-ones. I'm not sure what happened, but there was a point where they were even – and then I think Lawrence gave him an inside move, and then there was immediately 10 yards of separation. So it wasn't just a nice play. It was he got torched. And you don't see that happen too often. So I think that was encouraging. I think he probably should have pulled in a couple 50-50 balls that were kind of tossed to him in 7-on-7 where he dropped them. But I don't really put that on him just because the difficulty level of that was – ridiculous, but he did some good things yesterday. Avery Davis was Avery Davis. Deon Colsey, as you mentioned, the freshman out of Georgia, was impressive yesterday. He was able to not only get separation, but make a couple tough catches, including a ridiculous one-handed grab in one-on-ones. So I think that was encouraging to see, and I know that I've talked a lot about one-on-ones, and I'll be the first to say that one-on-ones don't really impress me that much. But for a freshman to make a one-handed catch like that in that situation, I think that can only steamroll his confidence or build his confidence, just because those kids just need every little bit of positivity that they can get. And then he went out and made a couple plays later on in practice that were good to see. And then the last guy I would probably mention would be Lorenzo Styles. His speed is there. He looks like he's probably put on 12 pounds of muscle. Wow. So he's significantly bigger. I would be surprised if he's not on the field in some capacity this year. I just think he's too good of an athlete. It means something to him, and he can catch the football. And we didn't get to see him block a whole lot yesterday. So I think that's probably the determining factor. But if he can block, I think that he'll probably see the field at some point.
So what we're going to do is I got the time, we're just going to edit that one part out, the part about the slander. We're going to edit that. We're just going to get rid of it all.
This
together.
Is a transparent podcast.
No, right? Listen.
Somebody has to humble him.
it's fine. You know what? And Kyle was named a captain today, and it's a captain move. You know, it's like, should I accelerate to this? Should I accelerate to this double move? Or you know what? The third, my guy LK, the third needs it, so we'll just let him go. And he had his moment, and that's fantastic, and that's what good teammates do. So kudos to Kyle for that.
You know what is confusing in all of this is it sounds like there's some talent in the wide receiver room that they're making plays, because I was led to believe by Twitter that Dell Alexander cannot recruit and that he cannot develop talent and that he was a terrible position coach, but I'm starting to hear evidence to the contrary, which would be weird for Twitter to be wrong, and our wide receiver room to be maybe better than people are given Greg's favorite position coach credit for?
A shameless plug. If you go out and subscribe to ISD, irishsportsdaily.com, for those that don't know, me and Jamie Uoyama have been a little bit higher on the Notre Dame receivers than some of our media counterparts. I'm not saying they're going to be Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, or all of the above, Justin Ross, T. Higgins, but I think it's the talent's there on a serious note. It's just those guys have been hampered by injuries, and I think some of them had a little bit of growing up to do, whether it's on or off the field. But I think they're finally finding that consistency in whatever they needed to do, and I think that's why you're kind of seeing them perform a little bit better in this fall camp.
And I think to that point, it's hard for me, and I guess this is, you know, good for Frank since he picked Kevin Austin to have the most catches this year. But like beyond him, it's hard for me to see any one other player like accumulating a bunch of numbers, because it's like, we, you know, Avery Davis is obviously a factor. Keys is a factor. Lindsey is a factor. You know, so what is that? Four or five guys plus. You know, you mentioned the freshmen, you know, they're impressing a little bit. And obviously Joe Wilkins has been, he's been getting, you know, he's been getting a lot of run. So the fact that he's getting run, whatever anyone thinks about him, is like the coaches are obviously putting him out there. So they obviously like him. So you have to factor that in. And then when you, you know, factor in the fact that they're going to have Tyree and Williams on the field a lot, plus Mayer has his own spot. So I don't know how do they get numbers out of this many guys? And obviously in the grand scheme, it's not really an issue. Like it doesn't matter to me, right? Like however the offense performs is how the offense performs. The only way, or I guess the only instance where it kind of becomes a problem is you have Keys, you have a bunch of guys who could deserve to be on the field. But is it hampering kind of Lindsey from having, you know, quote unquote, like a special season or Keys or Davis or something like that? So that's kind of interesting to me, just as kind of a subplot, is how the rotation, you know, works out in the end.
I think it could be similar to what you kind of saw in 2015, where you had Will Fuller, Chris Brown, Amir Carlisle, that kind of core. And you also had CJ Procise, who was not bad out of the backfield, obviously, with his receiver background as well. So I think this year's team probably has more talent across the board, if that makes sense. Obviously, they don't have a Will Fuller. Right. But I think Kevin Austin could obviously be that number one, where you kind of force feed him a little bit. And then you also have Michael Mayer. So I think you kind of have that guy. You have two guys that could be the guy where you could get 50, 60 catches out of them. But then after that, I mean, it could be an even split with four guys with 20 to 30 catches. And then you throw in Chris Tyree and Kyren Williams into that mix. I mean, I think it's fine. I just think they need to find ways to get Kyren and Tyree the ball too. And whether that's jet sweeps or the pass game, I just think that between those two, I think they need at least 25, 30 touches a game, just because they're just different with the ball in their hands. And we've talked about Lindsey's speed and what Keys did in the spring game and all that. Tyree and Kyren have already proven that in games. And I think that's probably important to note when you're talking about the receiving game, because I think Reese will probably be a little bit creative in how he gets those guys the ball this year.
Another factor in that is the type of offense, right? I mean, last year, I guess it might be hard for me to envision because of how much they ran the ball last year, but I guess, and it just doesn't have to be specific to what you saw at practice or anything, just maybe things you've heard or whatever, but how do you see that working out? As far as, I'm not really concerned about run-pass ratio, but are they going to, what could it flip? Are they going to throw the ball a lot more than maybe conventional wisdom says? Let's maybe ask it that way.
I think that probably just comes down to the O-line. Because, I mean, I think every team at this level, when you're a top five program, you want to just run the ball. And, I mean, I know that LSU and Alabama have had these high-flying offenses, but the run game has been the core of those teams, because teams just can't play the pass all the time, you know? So, I mean, it sounds kind of elementary, but, I mean, that's – it just comes down to if the line can produce a run game. If not, I mean, I think they have the weapons to throw the ball quite a bit, but I just think it's there because, I mean, you know the running backs are there and the receivers are going to be willing to block. So it just comes down to that inexperience on the offensive line, and if they can get those guys coached up well enough to get a consistent push throughout the whole season.
That is a very good pivot to one of the topics I wanted to talk about was the offensive line. And I know it's one practice and very limited is what you guys saw, but and the whole, you know, they weren't all out there because Fisher had the is in the concussion protocol still. But I guess what are early impressions of what the O-line is looking like in terms of alignment, in terms of, you know, just how they, you know, how they're looking and, you know, maybe how they're going to compare to past O-lines we've seen?
First and foremost, they're not as big as the typical Notre Dame offensive line. I think people can kind of see that just with how Zeke Carell and Kate Madden look. But I'm in the camp where you don't need big guards in college. Obviously, it helps, obviously, if you have an Aaron Banks or a Tommy Kramer. But you can get away with smaller guards, especially at this level, just considering how college offenses run and what Notre Dame did last year. So if you can move as a guard, I think you'll be fine. That was the first noticeable thing. And then I think Michael Carmody, who filled in for Fisher at left tackle, he did a pretty good job. I mean, I don't think he's there to compete at this point, but he was probably a little bit better than I thought he was. Obviously, Jarrett Patterson at center is one of the best, if not the best, in the country. And then at right tackle, you have Josh Lugg, which I've been in the camp of I don't think he's quite as good as some people give him credit for. I don't think he's a bad player by any means. I think he's a starter, and I don't think he can play guard, but tackle, I think he's good just because he can force guys to the outside, and he's tough to get around at 6'7", 310 pounds or whatever he is at this point. So I think he can be a quality starter. I just don't know if he's going to be like that elite guy that Notre Dame's had there for what, the last 3 years with Robert Hainsey. So I think they have some work to do there. It was tough to get a good read on the schematics yesterday just because you had people blocking your view with the team standing in front of you and everything like that. So I did – the second team offensive line got a good push because they were running the ball really well with Audric Estime and Logan Diggs. Against obviously the second and third string Notre Dame defense, but I think there's talent there. They're just kind of inexperienced, and I think chemistry is probably the biggest thing they're trying to work out right now. And with Fisher being out, that's not the greatest thing, but it'll be interesting to kind of see how they finish next week with the scrimmage on Thursday, just because I think that a lot of people just make an opinion off of one early practice, and this was their sixth practice yesterday. And I think there's a lot of growth that can happen between yesterday and another week, especially on the trenches, in the trenches. So we'll see what they do next week. But I think the talent's there. It's just I'm not sure it's going to be like that overpowering line that you've kind of seen over the last 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, size needs to not be that important because they're not very big. So – and it's, I don't know, like, I guess hearing you talk about it and it just kind of pings in my mind, like, all right, is this something that we are kind of, is it just good enough or is it something that's like, they can be a strength, you know? And I don't have like high expectations for this sixth practice. Like you said, like, it doesn't concern me really anything that I've heard about it. It doesn't like raise the level of concern for me. It's just like more theoretical about, you know, they just kind of moved Carell to guard, and, you know, obviously they know more about it than us since they've seen them before, but it was just one of those things like, oh yeah, we could just move him to guard. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Like he's been the center this whole time. And now he's a guard, and is that actually the best way? And it's just kind of like, yeah, okay. And it's more of like, yeah, I want a 2019 guy to be in the lineup right now. And I don't know, like, is it the best way to go?
I don't know. I mean, the only option, other option right now is to stick Rocco Spindler at left guard. And, I mean, he played fine in the spring game from what we saw. I mean, overall, I mean, everybody goes back to Kurt Heinisch walking him back on that one play. But I'm like, you're talking about a fifth-year senior playing an early freshman. Like, that should happen a couple of times, you know? So I think he's fine. It's just I'm not sure if you're Jeff Quinn, Tommy Reeves, or Brian Kelly that you want two true freshmen in Blake Fisher and Rocco Spindler starting that first game in Tallahassee.
Right.
So, I mean, obviously it's a play for the long-term future, and that's exciting. But at the same time, you still have to win games now. And if Zeke Correll can kind of be that fill-in and this year and play guard and gain even more experience and then take over the center position next year, I think that's fine. And I'm assuming they are going to rotate Spindler in at times just to get him experience and stuff like that. But I think this year they may be a little bit smaller, so we'll see how that plays out. But like I said, I think that if you're running outside zone a lot, I think you can get away with that stuff. Or you just don't need those big guards that they've had in the past.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it does need to – they have enough there. I think you can make it work. It's just similar to wide receiver last year. You have to make things work in order to, you know, be successful. And obviously they were. It is weird how it seems like the, I guess, narrative of this team is so much different than last year, where last year was like all size and bulk and power. And this year is very like focused on receivers and athleticism, which is fine. There's no, you know, there's no wrong way to do it. It's just a different way of thinking about the team, I guess. So you mentioned the second team running well with Estime and Logan Diggs. So let's we got a couple of talented backs back there, Matt.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to kind of see where they fit in, because when the third-team offense rolled out there, I mean, I didn't really have too much expectations, just because normally it's just a slop fest, just because no one knows what they're doing. They're just kind of in there. But, I mean, Audric Estime, we'll start with him. I mean, he ran with a purpose. Obviously, he big kid. I was a little surprised. He was a little hesitant to lower the shoulder at times on some of his runs, which I figured that was just something he'd do just for the fun of it. But it's not like he wasn't physical. There was a time where he turned the corner and he could have laid out Isaiah Pryor, but they made contact and I think he kind of held up a little bit. So we'll see what happens next time we get to practice and see if he's a little bit more physical. But he can run the ball. But Logan Diggs stole the show. I mean, he had a phenomenal day. He is a running back that I was a little higher on than most people, but I thought he lacked the short area quickness and the long speed to be an effective, like a number one. But from what I saw yesterday, I think he has a future. His future could be a number one back in Notre Dame. He's definitely worked on his short area explosiveness, and his speed is something else. I'm not saying he's Chris Tyree, but it's a lot better than his high school film. But he just knows how to find yards. I mean, he spun out of a tackle for loss in game two, and the whole sideline exploded with excitement yesterday. And he's just a nifty player. He's kind of reminds me of Theo Riddick, but a little bit fast, top end speed faster. He just got those uncanny body movements that get him in the extra yards.
That's right, because like in the limited clips released, I was like, "That looks like Riddick."
When funny, because I thought the same thing on the one that they put on IG where he took the handoff and kind of scored the touchdown at the goal line. I was like, "Oh, he moves like Theo a little bit."
So smooth. Like,
it's interesting because I remember it was 2015 when they got two running backs. It was Dexter and it was Josh Adams. And Dexter was the one, he was the top 100 guy. So he came in and everyone was kind of, you know, talking about him. And Josh had come off, like he had the ACL. So no one really knew, you know, kind of what he was going to do. And I remember those practice reports, like, you know, who's good is Josh Adams. And everyone kept saying, like, he keeps breaking long runs. And there's like, he keeps doing it. So there must be something there. And it's, so when Matt, you were talking about him, it just kind of, that kind of clicked in my mind, like, wow, like we really got something here. And so that makes me wonder, like, is Sebo in danger? Is he in danger of losing work?
I mean, I think on the initial reaction, I think people would probably say that after one practice of hearing how a true freshman lit it up. But I think what you got with Sebo is somebody that knows the offense, can pass block, can catch the ball out of the backfield, and obviously just have a typical Sebo Flemister run of 7 yards where he's just carrying four guys and you don't know how he's doing it because he's such a slender guy. But I think he has a role and he'll have a role. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that if, say, Kyren Williams or Chris Tyree would get hurt, I'm not sure that Sebo would just automatically flip into that number two spot and get 10 carries a game. Mm-hmm. I think you would have to consider Logan Diggs for that. Based off of what I've heard from sources who have been at practice, every practice, Logan Diggs has done this every practice. So I think he would – there would probably be a competition there, but I think you would have to consider at least giving Logan Diggs more carries if Kyren or Tyree got hurt. But, I mean, obviously, Sebo has proven that he can be productive too. So I think it's one of those great, great, great problems to have if you're Lance Taylor, just because you have a room of five guys that can play.
Yeah. I kind of feel like the staff loves Sebo too. Like, he seems like he's a very easy player to love, but I feel like they're going to give him run this year. Cause like as a staff, they just really like him, it seems. But how crazy is it thinking back now to like, oh damn, when was that? April? Yeah, it was April of 2020 when Will Shipley, when all the eggs were in that one basket, and he left us at the altar to end up with Diggs and Estime, it just seems like, I mean, we'll see what happens with Will Shipley. He was a five-star for a reason, obviously, but it almost seems like Notre Dame didn't fare too badly with their, you know, quote unquote consolation prize of two running backs who are looking pretty awesome very early on.
I'll say this about Lance Taylor. He may have missed out on Will Shipley and some of the top backs in the 2022 class, but this man can identify running back talent. I mean, I don't think there's a question about his evaluations. If you look back to his history at Stanford, I'm not sure anybody thought Bryce Love was going to be like a quality running back, and he was probably a top three back in college. And then obviously what he did with Christian McCaffrey, who is obviously a little bit higher ranked prospect, but I don't think anybody saw him turning into that type of player. So I think if you pay attention to Taylor's evaluations, I think the kids that he goes after hard or he lands, I think they have a pretty good track record at this point of overachieving. So I think that's kind of what has me excited to kind of see J.D. Price, the 2022 commit, next year. Because he plays a high level of ball in Texas and he's dominating. So
I love him.
Yeah.
Well, not to pivot too much from this year's team, but like looking at now, you know, let's say Diggs and Estime are hits, which again, you know, six practices or whatever. So, you know, who knows if that's the case, but let's assume they are, like, and we have the one back for next year. Do they have to add a second back after, you know, missing out on, you know, the quote unquote big three, one of the big three, at least, you know, over the summer? You think that, you know, adding a second back in this class is still something they need to do? Or from what you've seen, are you thinking they're going to be okay?
I think they're going to be okay regardless of what Diggs and Estime do. I think a second back was kind of a luxury for Notre Dame. And I think that's why you saw them dial in on those three guys. Or four guys, but I think J.D. Price is a guy that they had no problem taking, and that's why they accepted his commitment early, and it also allowed them to go big game hunting, so to speak, to go get that elite guy. And if they miss, you still have a high four-star back on coming in. So, I mean, if somebody shakes loose later on, I mean, that may be something they want to address, and I think they have a low four-star back, Quinshon Judkins, visiting for the Toledo game. I'm not sure if where Notre Dame stands with him at this point, but I think they're keeping their options open, but it's going to have to be a special kid to make them take away that spot, because I think obviously Viper end or even defensive back are two spots where if you can add an extra player there, I think that's more valuable than adding a second running back at this point.
Yeah, I think if you were to tell me, I was going to say, I think if you were to tell me right now, 100% guaranteed, say like no departures from the running back room other than what we all kind of expect that, you know, Kyren has another monster year. He is probably going to the NFL. Like, you know, a junior running back after two big years should go to the NFL based on the position. I think the only one that I look at and I go, because we talked about him already, is like, what does Sebo do next year where, you know, does he want to be the guy somewhere? And if he wants to be the guy somewhere, you know, just to be the guy, you know, to put up those stats before he tries to go to the NFL, that would be my only reason I think that I like would really say like, have to get that second back. Because then if Sebo goes and Kyren go, now what are we looking at? We're looking at what, four? We're looking at Tyree, Estime, Diggs, and Price, you know, next year. And then you probably need that back. But yeah, I think that's my, like, I looked what we're seeing out of these running backs, that would be the only take. Because there's some, again, within the fan base who are like, you got to take a second back. You got it. Yeah, you absolutely have to. But I think we've seen enough that, again, you tell me right now that, you know, on August 13th, 2022, Sebo Flemister is in Notre Dame's camp, then there's no reason to take another one.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that point of view, too. So, I mean, if they can add another one, great. But if not, I don't think it's the end of the world either.
Let's transition to my guys in the secondary.
You've had zero Kyle questions so far, Greg. You still have two. You still have two for allotment. Are you saving them?
I'm saving it. No, it's I was wondering how you evaluated those guys in the back. I was looking at some clips and gosh, man, Cam Hart and Clarence Lewis, they're two good looking players, you know, physically, just like they look great. So I was just wondering how you evaluated them. You know, they get a tough time in these clips when it's just like in one-on-ones all the time. It's like it's the worst drill, I'm telling you. But how did you evaluate those guys?
Yeah, Clarence and Cam, I thought they had really good days. I think they didn't get beat deep in the scrimmage portion, and I think the front seven had a lot to do with that, just because quarterbacks weren't given enough time to go deep. So yeah, that's one thing, but. They're up in the faces of the receivers pressing them and stuff, and I think that's a change from past philosophies. I think it lets them utilize their strengths because both those kids are physical kids. So let them go play ball. I was impressed with them, and especially in the 7-on-7 portion, it's just not, you can tell the game's slowing down for those guys. And that's a good thing, especially for Cam Hart, where he really hasn't played that much cornerback because he made that transition the middle of his freshman year in 2019, and then had a shoulder surgery and missed, I believe, the spring, or didn't get a spring last year, obviously. So last year in fall camp was really the first time he had a chance to kind of work on his own game. So I think being in that position now and getting reps, I think you're kind of seeing him take off. Ramon Henderson also impressed me. He's kind of like Cam Hart. He's just one of those long bodies that's super athletic. I think he just needs to kind of trust his eyes a little bit more. And then Tariq Bracely was working at nickelback yesterday and had a nice pick on Drew Pine in the scrimmage. I think for him, he's bigger, but his confidence is back. And last year, if you watched any Notre Dame game, you knew he had zero confidence by the end of the year. And Marcus Freeman, Mike Mickens have kind of built that back up, and he's playing with a lot of confidence right now, and that's great because they need four corners, especially when they face USC and North Carolina. And if Tariq Bracey can be that third or fourth guy, I mean, you're pretty good there.
I'm high on that group. I just think that I think they have size. I think they have athleticism. And I just think that the combination of Freeman and Mickens just having that kind of chemistry together, I just think they know what they want out of each other. And I think they're going to be really good back there, at least at the cornerback spot. You know, obviously Kyle's at one safety. What did you see from Houston? You know, I guess, actually, just tell me, what did you see from Houston? Then I'll go off of that.
Houston, he seemed more confident, because you can tell when he's playing with confidence and when he's not.
Right.
I didn't see the early enrollee spring Houston yesterday, where he was just kind of all over the field attacking, being physical. And I don't know what's happened since then, because he came into Notre Dame as known as a physical great tackler, and that's kind of been the opposite trajectory that he's gone, is now he's just not a physical guy. And I think yesterday he was in on more tackles and made more of an effort than he had in the past, but I would like to see a little bit more from him. And it may be there, and it may just be practice number six days in a row of practice. I mean, that wears on anybody, but I think he didn't, I don't want to say concern, but the stuff that I wanted to see from him, he didn't fully show yesterday. He showed that he was a better player and that he improved, and it looked like it mattered to him, but he still wasn't like making plays, so to speak. So I think that's kind of the next step for him, is going from a solid player that's just out there to a guy that's making a play here and there, to kind of take that pressure off Kyle Hamilton.
Yeah, like he didn't pop.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's the thing. Like, I don't know how to feel about it. You know, like, he hasn't popped. And so you obviously you're looking for that. Right. And I'm always wanting to, and I was really heartened by the clips they showed in the spring where he's making plays. You know, he's breaking up passes and he's making interceptions and one-on-ones and that sort of thing. And that's great. And then the spring game comes and there's just not really anything. And I can dismiss it because it's the spring game, and that's what happens in spring games sometimes. You know, it's not a big deal. And he's a fourth-year player, right? So how jacked up is he going to be for a spring game? So there's always kind of a caveat to it, or, you know, maybe there's a reason for it and that sort of thing. But I don't know. It's kind of like Foskey in a way, where it's like, yeah, you know, I hear a lot of things, but I would like to see those things happen.
I think the thing that stood out to me the most was, I went, like I said, you could see that football mattered to him yesterday, where I don't think that was the case in the past. Like, I don't want to say he was lackadaisical at all times in the past, but like, there's just more effort there. And he made a couple plays in 7-on-7 and 1-on-1s. He almost had a pick. I think it was 1-on-1, but I mean, he's doing better, but I still think there's more there. And I think that Chris O'Leary and Marcus Freeman have to just find a way to get that to come out in him.
Okay. Well, we've beat around the bush long enough. let's talk about the Heisman Trophy winner future. I guess, you know, it's hard. I was reading your practice report. And I had Kyle down for, he got 2 reps in 1-on-1s. And it's just like, they're not going to have him do like anything in these practices, are they?
No,
you're shaking your head. So it's kind of hard. Like, I remember, you know, I always want that first, you know, when he came in as a freshman, it was like, he's intercepting 3 passes every game, every week, or every practice. Yeah. And it's just like, it's just not going to happen. And so I don't know, like, what do you see there? Like, what's different from what you would expect? Or like, how do you evaluate him? I mean, obviously, like, he's going to be good. And I think everyone knows that. It's like, what do you see?
One of the things that I was actually going to watch yesterday in the scrimmage was just to see where Marcus lined him up at. Just because, I mean, you can line him up at all 3 levels of the defense, but Kyle probably played 4, maybe 5 plays in the scrimmage, and then they got him out. So
yeah,
that was kind of a little disheartening, but I understand why. I mean, there's no sense in getting Kyle hurt in a scrimmage on the 6th day of fall camp. So you get him hit just enough so he can take it entering the season and then get him out. But so that was probably the most disappointing thing for me, was just not being able to see how Marcus Freeman's going to use Kyle Hamilton. But he's bigger. I think he's gotten a little bit faster. But I mean, like, you have probably said 1,000 times on here, I mean, you can stick him on the field at any position and he's going to make plays. So,
yeah,
I mean, Kyle Hamilton's literally the least of my concerns at this point.
Yeah.
I just want to know where he's going to line up.
You just gave Greg the in to ask his other favorite Kyle Hamilton question.
No. First of all, if he did line up at receiver or took reps or whatever, if he was doing anything, no one would ever say. So Matt couldn't tell me. So and that's why I didn't ask you about like where they lined him up, because I feel like that's kind of under lock and key. And maybe they're not even doing that with you guys, because it's just like it's such a chess piece that it's information that everybody wants. They're not gonna show it. And if they did, they'd probably ask you guys not to talk about it, because it's just, I don't know, man. I just feel like Marcus Freeman. Go ahead.
In terms of Kyle playing offense, he didn't rule it out. Kyle didn't not rule it out when we talked with him on Tuesday, because somebody flat up asked him, and he's like, no, I haven't taken reps there. And then somebody's like, so is that out of the realm of possibilities? And he's like, not going to rule it out. So
that's what I'm talking about.
Oh man, do you have any idea what you just did to Greg?
listen. It is I read the comments, and we're all systems go on that front. And why would you rule it out? First of all, you never would. And I have yet to speak to anyone who has given me convincing reasons for why it's a bad idea. So it is not a bad idea.
I can tell you one. How stupid would it be if they had him in and ran a 5-yard slant and he tore his knee up?
Well, why would you run a 5-yard slant with the guy? I mean, I'm not asking the kid. Look, Lou Holtz used Jeff Burris to run ISO, and he was the ISO back. They put Jeff Burris, a first team All-American free safety, and on the goal line, and he ran ISO. They didn't just give him the ball. He ran ISO, and I have video of it. So it's just like, I'm not advocating for that. I'm just saying, put him out there. Like, you know, throw a fade.
Greg, if you listen to any of the old-timers on any message board or Twitter or even some podcasts, they don't like gimmicks. So.
Who doesn't like gimmicks?
The old-timers. Old-time Notre Dame fans.
I don't care.
Using Jeff Burris was a gimmick.
Ooh.
Using Kyle Hamilton, gimmick.
You know what? Using Kyle Hamilton is
I'd love to see
exactly. Everyone wants to see it. Look at, I'm sorry if I want them to use their best player. I'm sorry about that. I you know what? No, I don't apologize. Actually, they should use their best player as often as possible.
I already know how they can use him.
They should use him against Wisconsin in the uniforms that the old timers already don't like. So they use him as a gimmick when they're using the gimmicky uniforms in the game that half of the fan base is already upset that they're playing in an NFL stadium. Just
you
add it on.
Use him at the 5-yard line. You split Michael Mayer out to the left, Kyle Hamilton out to the right, and you put Kevin Austin in the slot, and you just throw a fade to whoever has the 1-on-1.
Right to me. Sounds right. In his 42-inch vertical leap.
Yep.
Let's go.
It'll be like that Stanford play.
Oh, man. Greg is now going to be living this dream for a couple more weeks. It's going to be it will be like at the bowl game. Hamilton will still not have had a single snap on offense, and he's going to be like, they've been saving it. They're saving it for the bowl game. Sorry, the playoff game. We're at the point in the pod where we're in the playoffs, so we're saving it for the playoff game.
The worst situation would be Notre Dame in the national title game. They roll it out. Kyle Hamilton at receiver catches like 2 touchdowns.
Greg would be – oh my God, inseparable. We would never be able to talk to Greg again. He would retire, actually. Greg would never pod or write again, because he'd be this is it. This is never, nothing is stopping that.
That's right.
I'm surprised Greg doesn't have the Kyle Hamilton logo on the wall behind him.
I know. Or the shirt. I saw the tweet with the shirt, and yet that is not, that's not one of the Hamilton shirts.
Yeah, well, maybe you should wait.
Oh, okay.
Maybe we got stuff coming up.
Okay. All right. Did you order the fathead? Like, is that, did you?
I did not order the fathead. Yeah, I did not order the Fathead, but I did order a cameo that he did for my nephew.
I saw your tweet.
It was pretty sweet. He was pretty fired up. My sister, I think, was the most fired up. She was freaking out about it. So he gave him a little pep talk. He's got a championship flag football game today. So
what you should do is have your relative send a pep talk back to Carl Hamilton before the Florida State game.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to hear from. He doesn't want to hear from everybody.
Oh man! All right. Well, you got more questions, Greg? I know we're already pushing an hour, and we've been told by some of our commenters that we talk too long. But we had some feedback that we should talk longer. So I think we just do. We do us.
I mean, some Notre Dame people are out here running 3-4 hour podcasts. So, I mean, maybe people have big yards to mow or something. So.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. Out here, we have yards. We have very small yards, so we like
same to here.
Short.
It takes me a half an hour, if that.
Okay. Well, I guess. I guess we can end it with what's a little. I guess nugget that Matt, you could give us where it's like something that's kind of, you watch the practice and it's in your mind and it's like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if X thing happened, or I'm intrigued by X thing that I wasn't expecting to be intrigued by.
Probably the thing that stood out to me the most was how they kind of have positionless linebackers. I don't want to state that there's not positions for linebackers, but they were kind of lining up all over the place, which if you've watched Cincinnati's defense under Marcus Freeman, they line up in crazy formations where it makes zero sense, but whatever. But Maris Leifau lined up kind of on the edge, lined up kind of in that traditional will spot, but then he was also playing Rover. So I think he may be that chess piece at the second level where they kind of move him around to get him in favorable spots. So I don't want to say that he wasn't the Will, because he is the Will. But there were times where Drew White and Jack Kaiser kind of flip-flopped. So it was Will. They were the Will and Mike, and then Maris was playing the Rover. So I don't know if that's like a matchup thing where if the tight end splits out, he just goes out there or something. If that's one of their keys or whatever, but they're doing a lot of mixing and matching with that. And then obviously he capped off the scrimmage portion of his part where came off the edge, beat a block, tipped a pass, picked off Drew Pine, and then it would have been like an 80-yard pick six. So, yeah. I mean, that was exciting to see. But I think he could probably be the chess piece, kind of like how they used Owusu-Koramoah in kind of different roles. I'm not saying he's going to be Jock, but just line him up everywhere and make the offense kind of confused on where he's going to line up. And then obviously with Freeman's crazy formation and pre-snap looks, I mean, I think that can really confuse the defense if you're just constantly moving those guys around.
All right, Frank, you ready for Nebraska? You ready for 95 Nebraska?
I love it. Hey, I've been talking about my boy Maris as Rover in the short history of this podcast.
He looks big, too.
Wow.
Just looks like a Rover to me is all I'm saying. We'll see. I'm very, very excited for Maris Leifau this year. I don't know if my prediction of him leading the team in tackles will come to fruition, but we'll see. I saw somebody tweet it that Leifau was at Rover, and I was like, uh-oh. Because my dream scenario is still New Jersey's own Shane Simon getting a starting gig. Probably not going to happen. However, I would love to see it happen.
The interesting package could be the dollar package where they have Leifau kind of roaming, and then you move Botello back to linebacker. And I don't think offensive lines or running backs want to see Maris Leifau and Jordan Botello coming from the second level, because that just seems like a nightmare.
That's a lot of violence on the field at once.
That's a lot of Hawaii.
I don't know if the referees want to see that either. That's
I keep thinking back to that play last year, Maris blitzed at North Carolina and just destroyed the running back. And he was like 215. Now he's 230. Wow. But then you think about that, but then you think about Jordan Botello doing that. And like Botello might have ended the guy's life. So I think it's exciting just to kind of think about the blitzing Hawaiians, so to speak.
I'm getting there, Greg. It's I don't know if I'm 95 Nebraska yet, but every time we do this, I end the podcast more optimistic about the season. So we're getting there. We're close now too, man. What are we? Three Saturdays away or three Sundays away from actual real football?
Yeah, exciting.
It's so exciting. My last question is for you, Matt. Is you know, you see this team much more closely than we do, follow it much more closely than we do. What are your, August 13th expectations, for this team? Is this a 10-2 team, or is this a team that a couple things go right, they can go on a run?
I've said since the end of last year, or I guess since Jack Cohn arrived, 10-2, I think, should be the floor for this team. And if you look at the schedule, it's hard to pick out two losses, but I don't think this team is going to go undefeated either. So, I mean, that's kind of the tough situation with this team is it playoff good? I don't know. I could see them going 12-0, but they're probably going to lose a game or two that they probably shouldn't lose. But it's just hard to pick out that game because – they're going to be the best team stepping onto the field for all 12 games. And then I know people have kind of circled the Cincinnati and Wisconsin games, but I mean, Notre Dame has twice as many athletes as those two programs. So yeah. I think that matters. I mean, I think if you look at Wisconsin, Ohio State always pulls away from them just because those pure athletes, those elite athletes end up making more plays in the end. So I don't know. I think 10-2 is probably the floor. Anything less, I think, would be a disappointment considering what's gone on since 2016. But I don't know if they're going to get to 12-0 either.
It is a weird schedule. Like, even with the coaches poll that came out this week, which I know is meaningless, you look at it and there's so many opponents that were, between 10 and 20. And it's like 10 and 20 in the preseason poll is like no man's land anyway. That's like those are the teams that people are like, I don't know what the hell this team's going to do. They could be good. They might not be. So, yeah.
I think the game that sticks out to me on the schedule is the Virginia game because they have a returning quarterback that I wouldn't say is elite, but he's just a thorn in everybody's side. And then obviously Virginia is not – it's just given Notre Dame problems in the past playing there. So – and then Bracco Mendenhall has always coached well against Notre Dame. So I think that could be one of the games that nobody's talking about as one that they'll probably have to show up that game.
That's a good point. And did it surprise you guys, by the way, that USC was ranked – USC was ranked, higher than Wisconsin in the coaches' poll. That was, I know, again, the coaches' poll doesn't mean much, but I was like, really? You're gonna put USC ahead of Wisconsin to start the season? Like, what has USC shown us? What has Helton showed us as a coach to back up that preseason ranking?
Who doesn't love the air raid, though?
That's true. Greg, did you have any? You
look. It seems to me that if you return, if you are returning your quarterback. And that quarterback is considered good, then they're going to rank you high. I mean, Pat 40 today, he put Cincinnati at 6. They have a returning quarterback. Wisconsin at 8, USC at 9, Notre Dame at 11. Like, what has happened in the last 4 years that would lead you to come up with something like that? So that's just do you have a returning quarterback? That's how everyone looks at it.
I'd say what has happened in the last 10 years to make you think Pat 40 really is like an authority.
I know, but I'm just saying space. that's how people evaluate these things. It's like they see Keaton Slovis. It's like, okay.
Yeah. All right, I can see it. Any other parting shots, Greg? Because I had a couple takeaways here that Notre Dame is a SEC team. That was what we started with. We got Leah Fowler Rover, K Kevin Austin, All American. What else? What?
I'm just getting ready to tweet that it's confirmed that Kyle's going to play offense. So I'm just getting ready to hype that up. I mean, from an insider, he's at practices, so it just, you know, talks to the players. I don't need any other proof. So I guess I'll just put it out. Yeah.
Yeah, per Kyle Hamilton.
Well, all right. I think we'll wrap the interview portion. Matt, thanks, man. This was a lot of fun. You are welcome back. Obviously, anytime to chat with us. Feel free to give Greg a harder time next time. But other than that,
yeah, no problem. I appreciate it. It was fun.
All right, that was fun. That was a good chat with
that was a good time with
Mr. Freeman. Man. Between him and Jamie, you know, and Ashton a couple weeks ago, these interviews that we do are becoming pretty fun, and getting the different perspective here on the pod.
Yeah, it's good, and I was really excited to talk to someone who was there. You know, it's one thing to listen to pods but you always, when you listen, you always have your own questions. You know, you always like, I want to ask about this and that. So it was nice to be able to do that myself. And, you know, Matt, obviously, good source of information. So it was really good.
Speaking of those other perspectives, Greg, we got called old in the review.
We did.
We got called old. You know what? And it's fine. We're not young. Like, we could be clear about that. We are not young. However, I cracked up. When I read it. We did get a review here from Choice Axiom, who said, great, but could be better. And this is the part that cracked me up. The duo was great, but was better with three and having a young fan's perspective. Womp, womp, womp.
And that's obviously, and that's directly in reference to Ashton, because
100%.
The only other person we've had on is Jamie, and I don't think he would be considered like a young guy.
Yeah.
Probably younger than us, but not like young perspective. And Ashton comes on, and obviously she kills it, and so everyone wants her back. So we're gonna have to get her back soon.
That was funny. I saw that and I cracked up. And speaking of, it is funny. The young fans' perspective and how much it does skew with our takes, because we had one of those events this week that divides the fan base between the young and the old, with the Shamrock Series uniforms coming out, and Notre Dame releasing the uniforms that they're going to play, that they're going to use, for the game against, Wisconsin at the end of, of September. But to give you an idea of the young fans' perspective, my little nephew, 18-year-old nephew, texts me when they come out and was like, "Nah, they're okay, but they're not great." And I was like, "Well, I was like, they have a hard job, man. I'm like, they gotta create something that you young kids like, that us old guys don't hate." And his response was, "Yeah, those 2018 Yankee Stadium jerseys were just awesome." And I was like, "Oh my god, that's you just made my point, because those are the ones that, like, of all of the Shamrock Series jerseys that came out, I think the old, the old guard and the traditionalist fans were probably the most like, you can never wear these. Why would you wear these?" So it was pretty funny, because I saw that that review of us, and then having that text conversation with my nephew, like within like 2 or 3 days of each other, was just hilarious. But hey, we got some other reviews too, because we're still rocking a perfect 5 out of 5 rating on Apple. Keep them coming. We we love them. I tweeted this one out. And one, this guy's username here on Apple is amazing. So, and his review was great too. But Nick_Baker_37-0. Remember the six, Greg. Remember the six.
That's right.
Left us a comment that says, "Top tier ND podcast. I wrote this listening to the end of episode 8. There's absolutely no reason to make this pod any shorter. If anything, follow the 1 foot down strategy and just keep the record button on and go." you aren't subscribed to this and you love Notre Dame, what are you doing? Seriously love what you all are doing and can't wait for the season to start. Go Irish. And Greg, next pod, can you tell us what your fan club plans are after Kyle goes number one overall in the draft? I saw you tweet you were going to answer Nick. So what is your answer?
Look, we've come this far. I'm obviously just going to continue to stan wherever he goes in the NFL. I mean, I'll always be a Notre Dame fan. We'll always cover the team. I'll always do that. But Kyle's my guy, and for better or worse, so we're just going to stan wherever he ends up, and that's going to be the LA Chargers, because I'm going to will it into existence. That's what I'm going to do. So that's how it's going to go. So he can be a hometown fan, a hometown player for me, and I'm going to root for him that way.
What if, because I got an NFL team, you all know that, who listen, is probably not going to be very good this year. Like I'm aware. I know my Eagles are not going to be, they're very unlikely to be in playoff contention, let alone a playoff team. They are much more likely to be drafting inside the top 5 to 10. What happens, Greg? What happens if your beloved Kyle lands with my Philadelphia Eagles? Are you going to be, you join in the nest? Is that what's going to happen?
Yeah, of course. I don't have an NFL team. I don't have an NFL team. So I'm a free agent.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. So apologies in advance to all of you, but if Kyle gets drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles, we might have to devote like 5 minutes a week to Kyle Hamilton Philadelphia Eagle updates. So we got that. And then, you know what? I'm reading them all. So I'm going to read one more. We got one more here that was a 5-star from Matthew P.E. writes, love it. Love the UHND blog. And now love the podcast. Thanks, guys. And keep them coming. Go Irish. You know what? We are going to keep them coming.
No doubt.
We also clearly have not taken into heart the comments on keeping these shorter, because we're closing in on an hour and a half again. But you know what? Once the record button starts, it's hard to stop. You know, I challenge you all to sit and talk Notre Dame football with a buddy and just be able to say, nah, dude, we're at an hour. I got to cut this now. once it starts, it's hard to turn it off. So, hey, we'll do our best. I don't know. Maybe again, we'll see. We'll see if at some point we cut them into two parts, but I don't think so. I think we just let this go. And, you know, shout out to our friends at One Foot Down for getting referenced in the comments already. But, hey, man, it's been a fun week of Notre Dame football with practices starting, captains being named. We're going to have a starting quarterback officially, even though we probably unofficially have it already on Monday of next week. But, man, the season is getting here. We're close. We're getting close.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm just – I can't even wait. Like, it's like I was thinking today about the just – oh man, like the day of the game is just going to be, I'm just going to be so hyped. It's just going to be so much fun. Yeah.
I know. Can't wait. It's weird. It's a Sunday. It's going to be, but hey, we'll see what, I remember 2019 being like, just having like so much FOMO on that Saturday, being like,
yeah, yeah.
It's cool. We're the marquee Sunday night game to an extent, but at the same time, it's like, I just want to watch them. Luckily, though, there is no work the next day because it's not going to be a single high kind of night. It's going to be a multiple, you know, high kind of night where I may have more than one, choice beverage. But hey, I think that helps us put a bow here on another episode 9 of the Single High podcast. And I think we're keeping this going, aren't we? And we're bringing in guests. Look at this is for real, isn't it?
Yeah,
we made it real.
Yeah.
All right. As always, everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for reviewing us. If you haven't done either of those two things, you should probably do that now, because we're gonna keep on producing the content and coming out with these on a weekly basis. The season's here. There's going to be a lot to digest, a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about it all. We're going to get you all ready, for the season. I'm going to keep having beers during each of these and getting to the point where I'm ready for us to win the national championship. And it's going to be a fun couple weeks, and it's going to be an even more fun season as we march to the playoffs. All right. Thanks again, everybody. And always go Irish.